It's time, everybody, time for TWIM, This Week in Mormons. I am your intrepid co-host, Jeff, coming to you from California.
The sunny hills of Petaluma.
Indeed. Let's say I'm in Petaluma right now.
I'm coming to you from Alberta.
And Al is in Alberta. Wait a minute.
Live from the Calgary Stampede.
I thought they didn't have internet in Canada.
No, Jeff, that's only the eastern provinces.
Oh, you mean the Maritimes?
The Maritimes.
Where they're still doing, like, Anne of Green Gables out there on Prince Edward Island. No electricity, no internet. But boy, is that Gilbert. Goodness.
Oh, Red. Dude, Anne of Green Gables, that was sadly a huge part of my life growing up.
My sister was...
I can't even tell you how many times because I had three older sisters, and so the ruling, the hierarchy of television options was not mine to choose. And so, I watch a lot of that Anne of Green Gables garbage.
I am ashamed to admit that I, too, have seen more than my fair share.
Well, because there's like Anne of Green Gables, Anne of Avonlea.
I think those are the only two miniseries of it that I've seen.
Though. But it's like four tapes of Anne of Green. Man, that's a lot.
It's hardcore. She grows from a spunky Pippi Longstocking wannabe to a teacher who teaches kids.
She teaches them. I can't even remember what was so irksome about that show as a kid. But there was like it was an engaging series, I guess.
It's made by Canadians.
But gosh, that was. Anyway, how about that Anne of Green Gables?
You know what was sad about that? You know the grandpa character or her uncle? The old dude. It's in the first one, right?
I'm looking him up now.
I don't remember the character's name at all.
Okay.
Let's find out. Let's get some IMDb business going on up in here. Oh, Matthew Cuthbert, whatever his name was. Anyway, Richard Farnsworth, who played him.
Yes.
The poor guy killed himself.
Wait, what?
In real life.
For what?
It was maybe a few years ago. He was really depressed or something like that.
Maybe he was sad that there was no more. Well, because there's been a lot of Anna Green stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Richard Farnsworth was. Oh, wow. I didn't realize it's been 10 years since he died. Yeah. He was diagnosed with terminal cancer, so he took care of things himself.
Wow, man.
Yeah, that's so next time you're watching all those people hanging out on Prince Edward Island, remember him. Another side
note.
Oh,
no way, dude.
Yeah, another side note, oh my Canadian friends. Explain to me how Prince Edward Island is a province. It is as big as, like, Catalina in California. It's a dinky little island, and it's a province. I mean, we have Rhode Island.
So they don't have to pay taxes on it.
I just think it sounds silly. I mean, we have Rhode Island in the U.S., and I'll give the Canadians credit that Prince Edward Island is actually an island, unlike Rhode Island. But how does that happen? I mean...
So Megan Follows is the Anne of Green Gables? That's who played Anne?
Sure!
Whatever happened to her?
I don't know.
Where did she go?
Well, you know, she probably retired to teach improv.
Oh, you know what happened? Is she pronounces her name Megan. She's got children, a boy and a girl. Well, there you go.
This is wonderful. I think we should devote a new segment every week to where are they now? The cast.
She's on Facebook.
Should we find her?
It's just a fan page.
Dang it. There's got to be a real one.
She's got 3,000 fans. We can beat Megan Follows.
Easily.
This Week in Mormons can take Anne of Green Gables.
Speaking of which, I want to put out a challenge to our friends. We need to jump up a bit more in our Facebook fan base.
I think we need to use it more. I think if we talked on it more.
Maybe so. I don't know.
I blame ourselves, Jeff.
Okay. I would just like them to tell us, our adoring public, to tell us what the problem is.
What I really would like to see is more people throwing up stories on there, because we've gotten some good ones out of our Facebook and Twitter.
Bless their hearts.
Love Bless them. All of them.
So, but Everyone's anyway, we hearts. We need to rise up to another level as far as fandom on there, and that's where we can do better, and so can you, fans.
They need to bring a torch.
I'm just saying,
Isabella,
Al, and myself take time out of our busy schedules to give you this entertainment. We do it out of love.
One thing you don't know about Jeff, people, is Jeff is a pity whore. He loves people to feel bad for him.
I don't. I am not my grandmother. No, I am just saying that I'm trying to keep perspective. We go to great lengths to provide this wonderful show to everyone. And we are so glad that everyone listens. We appreciate it. But, you know, it goes both ways. This is not a one-way street. Or a one-way street, as I was trying to say.
By the way, last night at dinner, I was out with a couple of friends, and one girl mentioned that she said that she was a new huge fan and had been going back listening to past episodes.
Hello.
How much she loved it.
That's strong. Who?
It was the Victoria Hatton who posted on our fan page.
She must be our best friend.
She was excited, though. It was encouraging.
Well, I'm glad. Well, it's always good when people are excited. Oh, yeah, and Al, of course, comes to us from Utah right now.
I'm here.
So,
here
hey,
I am.
Enjoy your time there. Enjoy your trip to Utah.
I have moved to Utah.
You have not moved to Utah.
I will be here for a week and a half, and then I have some other travel before Christmas, and then I will be moving to New York, and then I will be moving to Utah again thereafter.
No, not again. You haven't moved there this time around.
Jeff, I assure you, I have all my things here.
That means absolutely nothing to me. You have not. You're not living anywhere.
I hereby have driven my car through the Wyoming snowstorms, which were horrendous, by the way. You people in Wyoming, I don't know if you realize this, but the rest of the country is better.
There's a reason it's the least populated state in the Union.
I fell asleep for about an hour in my car at a rest stop, and it was -1, -2. I was like, why would anybody live here? And actually, they not a lot do, but
no.
Well, I guess it's the same as Missouri. I can appreciate growing up there and loving it somehow, but driving through at -2 degrees, I was inspired to leave that state and never go back. And that's what I did.
Yeah, except so, you are going to go back, and you're not living in Utah.
I'll go down Denver way. I have people in Denver.
This is what happens. Your car is packed up because you yourself have said that you don't have very much. You take whatever you have with you everywhere you go, and you're not living in Utah.
I'm a frugal man.
You're not living in Utah. You took all your junk there, and you're hanging out there for a little while, and then you're going to go elsewhere.
Jeff,
and you just took enough stuff
until
you have to go back
lesson.
To Kansas to get more. But you
Let
always
me teach
based
you the
Kansas.
Life lesson I like to call eat, pray, love.
Either way, I contest your point about you living in Utah, because if you lived in Utah, I would perchance be living in Utah, you know, in like our own place.
I don't know why
example.
This is so hard for you to grasp. I live here.
But because
this is my home.
Because it's not your home. You don't. You're on a trip.
When I'm out to dinner and I say it's time to go home, where do I go? I go here.
See, when I like, say I go to Utah.
To Justin's basement.
Yeah. On the mattress, on their extra mattress in the living room.
It's a wonderful place.
I've been there. I've done it myself.
You've lived in Utah.
But that's just what I'm saying. When I was up there for a week earlier this year in July, it was a trip. Nowhere did I claim to anyone, by the by, I am moving to Utah. I will be there living there for a week.
I don't know why you want me to have roots in places so bad. I just have friends in places.
Not roots. If you had packed up, if you're like, I'm going to find an apartment. I'm going to be living in this place for a while. Living my life, you know? Oh, let me ask you, are you moving your records to Utah, Al?
I will. I'll transfer them on Sunday.
No, you won't.
Why not?
Because you're not going to be there.
Actually, I have no idea where my records are right now.
Yeah, because you don't live anywhere. Your records are probably in Kansas. And they're always going to be in Missouri.
You got sent back to church headquarters.
And they're always going to be there. That's what I'm saying. You don't live anywhere until your records are there, my friend.
Sadly, my grandparents and my parents have both received calls at numerous points in my post-mission career asking if they could help track down me so they could get my records back to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my grandma calls me. She's like, "Al, you're still active, right?" I said, "Yeah, grandma. They just can't find me. They've been looking."
You embarrass me. Anyway, and speaking of family.
That was my week. Moved out. Oh, good. Moved out to Salt Lake.
And I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I hope everybody did.
I did. It was one of the better Thanksgivings for me, I think.
Well, that's wonderful.
We watched The Mighty Ducks.
Quack, quack, family, quack.
Which is great because, like, we hadn't seen that in probably 15 years. But amazingly, everybody in my family could still quote that movie word for word.
It's a beautiful film, and it gave us our local hockey team. So, what's not to love?
How was your Thanksgiving, Jeff?
It was pretty good. Went out to Redlands, aunt and uncle. So, a lot of the extended family was in Utah. So, we get whenever we do this in Redlands, we get to enjoy the few of us in the extended family in the area. And then my aunt and uncle's friends always come by. Apparently, they don't like to spend Thanksgiving with their own children. I don't know what they do. But they came over, and it was fine until the inevitable happened when they wanted to start. One of these friends, who's a very sweet woman, thought that it would be fun if we all sang. We should all sing songs together. And I'm lucky I don't get picked on as much as far as musicality, because my brother and my sister are far more above the radar, as far as their singing skills and what have you. And my sister hates it. My sister's a choir director. Okay, that's what she teaches. She's a teacher, public education. And
wait,
so,
Colin sings?
Colin's quite the singer. He's very operatic.
Really?
Yeah. And the great thing is, when people know that I can sing, they're always surprised. So, lucky me, I can usually avoid getting conscripted into things like this.
Right.
So, anyway, they wanted to sing, and my sister Melanie and I knew this was coming, so we both sort of individually slowly disappeared from the main area where everybody was, and I found her in a back room, and she and I hid in a closet for about half an hour together while we heard family looming around trying to find us. It was great. We couldn't be found.
So you and your sister played hide-and-go-seek in a closet.
Yes, and it was funny because they were looking for us, but then I felt bad because guilt sets in. I don't want to, like, not be a team player. And so then we went and just watched TV with my cousin and told him, and my mom came and found us. So there you are. And we said, "We've been here the whole time." And you know my mom well enough that she actually started to look confused, as if we really were there the whole time and her mind was playing tricks on her, which was great. I love messing with the elderly. And but then they sent the big guns. We ignored her. But then my grandma comes lumbering in.
Oh, no. A lumbering grandma.
Oh, yeah. She's the general. And she's gotten a lot more frail in her later years. And she just walks in. "You guys need to be singing. Get up."
And she pull a tennis ball off her walker and throw it at
you? No, but she was so stern. And I even said, "Grandma, I just drove you and Grandpa to Utah a few weeks ago. I think I've earned some favors. I don't need to go sing." And she just stood there. "Nope, get up. Nope."
Wow.
She's never so stern. And we were forced to get up and go sing.
You know, one of my buddies for Thanksgiving, they they're all gathered around. First, great story. I don't mean to.
You hate my stories. You might as well admit it.
No, that was good.
Yeah, you can't say no to grandma, man. She was.
One of my buddies was telling me they played a game over Thanksgiving where everybody was around the table, and then they played an impromptu round of Survivor, and they just started voting everybody off one by one to see who would be the last one standing, which I think is an awesome game. Because you sit around the table and who do you pick off? Who do you vote off the island
first?
Yeah,
I like
first?
That. That's fun.
One by one. And hurt some feelings, of course, which would be the nature to do it. But around the holidays, I think we all should play a little game of Survivor with our families. And when grandma gets voted off, she swears you're all uninvited to Christmas. And like, I would have a blast. But who's the last one standing?
That's hard to say. It would get very vicious. Let's not pretend.
That's what I'm talking about. See, this is good gaming. Good gaming.
So as you can tell from our extended banter, the content sucks this week.
No, Jeff. No.
But please don't turn off your transistor radio. I'll let you know what it is, and you can decide, dear listener.
Let me break the first news story. McKay Coppins is bowing out.
He's gone.
The man has exited stage left.
Now, granted, we're not breaking anything because apparently this happened 2 months ago. But, yeah.
He is the most worthy opponent.
I was perusing Mormon Times, and I thought to myself, I have not seen much from Mr. Coppins for some time. And so I looked up his name, and sure enough, on October 1st, he offered up his final post for his Mormon 20-something thing that he's been doing for a long time, I guess.
What I have to say to McKay Coppins is, McKay, it gets better.
You're a terrible human being. Oh, yes, you are.
It gets better.
Well, I'm sure he's busy. He has a budding journalism career going.
It's true.
But it's true. I just realized it almost makes me sad because I feel like I always have to have an enemy.
Yeah, it is kind of the Lex Luthor to our Superman.
Yeah, he keeps my mind going. I have to stay fresh so that I can combat the evil.
Who's the guy in Inspector Gadget? Dr. Claw. The Dr. Claw
wants to bring up.
The Dr. Claw and his gold-toothed cat have now left.
I know.
We'll miss you.
We will, because I'm going to have to see what else he does with himself. No more McKay. No more McKay to make fun of.
That is our breaking news story for this week in Mormons.
From October 1st.
From 2 months to the day.
Now, which really shows how up on things we are. So anyway, other things this week, we'll talk about the new LDS.org, because now you're stuck with it. Some good tips for sacrament meeting. Also, a new segment called This Week in Catholics, and you'll understand why. And then some random goodies, shall we say.
Yeah, so the new LDS.org, we talked, it's been in beta for a while. You could hit it going to new.lds.org, and now LDS.org just goes right to it.
Straight up.
Not bad. Not bad.
I mean, we've reviewed it already, obviously, but...
Yeah, there's some good things. I still just hate that huge, obtrusive banner right in the middle. It's such bad functionality for a site. However, they can feature some articles on there. Maybe that's good for them. When I visit LDS.org, though, it's rarely perusing. I'm more looking for something. And so I feel like they've put obstacles in my path for that and tried to give me more...
Well,
I don't know. It just feels like a cheap template they picked up.
Yeah, I'm not huge on it because the thing I liked is now, okay, it's huge as far as the, you know, the rolling banner. What I don't like is I liked how simple it was, the old one, just on the sidebar on the right side when it would say, you know, prepare a talk, prepare a lesson, real quick. I mean, I can still find that from the menu, but I, you know, it's very simple right there. Oh, I'm doing a lesson. I'll click on this, and then it takes me to all the manuals.
It just really looks like a poorly done blog. I mean, the way that the three column layout, I don't know.
Well, I know you're very anti three column, so
I am. It's true. I like a little intuitiveness put into the design. Think about it, people. Put some work into this.
Yeah, because now I'm sitting here. I'm like, tools. What do I count? Like, I'm looking right now. I'm trying to look at it and figure out what I need to do if I'm going to teach a lesson, like as a first time visitor. And I'm scrolling around. I'm wasting time. I'm looking under menu. Magazine manuals, found it under study, Old Testament.
Yeah, it's just,
and then once I get there, it's okay. Gospel Doctrine Teacher's Manual, and there I am. I'm good to go.
So anyway, it's live. You got to use it.
You're stuck with it.
I'm kind of stoked about some of the work they're doing, like in the tools section, in the menu section. I can't imagine that requesting a copy of the Patriarchal Blessing is frequently needed enough to put
to merit
it on
that.
The very front page.
Well, I just went to it right now. It requires your LDS account username and password.
Yeah, all those tools do.
All of them do? My study? Yeah, I guess they do. Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, it seems like something you would want to bury, especially because there's a see all tools.
Hey, have you used the LDS Tools app for... is that just for iPhone?
LDS Tools app?
Yeah.
I mean, I have the Gospel Library.
I just barely
Android,
saw it, but there's a download ward and stake directory information to your phone.
Yeah, I have one. I have a third-party app for that stake called Stake Central. Love it. All it uses is, you know, your login for your ward website. And as I go on there, I'm looking at it right now. I got the paid version because it's totally worth it. Based on wherever your records are, it downloaded everything from my entire stake. And it's not just the directory. It breaks it down into the auxiliaries, who does what. They just added a groups feature, which is really nice. I can organize people in the ward into groups and just send a mass email or text or what have you. So
that's sweet.
It is really nice. Very, very useful. Nice that they can pull all of that, too, just from our login information. It seems kind of creepy to me. What can you do? So go to there. Oh, and for those of you who have opinions about it, there is a survey that can be taken. Did you see that?
Yes.
Out? So everyone should take the survey. Let them know what you think. Because the church is inspiration, but, you know.
They're not going to change anything.
At the same time.
Especially right after. It's the same thing as any big web move. You're going to give it 6 months to settle in. At least.
Yeah, we're stuck with it for a while. So.
Yeah. Anyway.
But check it out. Get used to it. It is what it is.
Check it out. Get used to it.
Well, that's all I can say. If you're not a fan of it, that's your resource. That's all you've got now. So, side note, as far as doing apps, I like the Gospel Library app, the official one from the church. I know they're working on a fuller version for Android because the iPhone one's way better, which is stupid because Android has bigger market share now than iOS. But anyway, I wish they would just do like an LDS.org app because I like having the Gospel Library, but I would just like to have the functionality of everything on LDS.org in one app. Why not just do that?
Work on that,
yeah,
people.
So anyway, I'm going to move on here as I'm staring at a picture from the pulpit of the conference center. I'm there.
Whoa.
And this comes to us from the Mormon Times from David Hickson. 5 tips for a better sacrament meeting talk.
I loved this right
now. I enjoy this. I also hope it is totally lucid because he posted it at 4 in the morning. So I don't know what he was doing awake. So nobody he might does. Have been a little loopy at the time. So 5 tips for sacrament meeting talks. And I figure,
are these his 5 tips or yours?
These are his 5 tips. So okay. I will summarize the 5 existing tips. And then, of course, I think everyone has an opinion on this. So we will sound off. So actually, let's go through his one by one and then comment. How does that sound?
Okay.
Cool. Okay, the first one's a great one. Do not begin with a story of receiving the assignment to talk.
Dude, that's everybody gets up and says, well, so the other night I was sitting at home eating some ice cream and the old bishop gave me a call. Didn't you, bishop? Turn around, wink at him, go back to
Yeah, like it even says, the playful jab at the bishop. I like how he straight up says, it is not really very interesting or original. Resist the temptation. The general authorities of the church don't do it in general conference. But that's a given because all of them will just be, when President Monson called me in to speak, I was like, oh, Tommy. Ah.
The other side of it is it illegitimizes your entire talk, right? If you're like, well, I just got this assignment 6 hours ago,
it's
probably going to stink.
No, well, that's...
Like, don't make excuses for it. Just do the best that you can.
Yeah, well, and that's like your own one to add on to that. Yeah, I've seen that so many times when someone gets up there and says just that. Oh, I barely started doing this. Or they start off saying, I'm not a very good speaker.
Well, Sunday, the guy was like, yeah, I've been preparing this while I've been sitting up here. I was like, I have already turned you off. Yeah. I will not listen to a thing you say. Don't do that.
I have always gone out of my way. I feel like my mom has raised us reasonably well as far as giving talks.
I would disagree with that.
Thank you. But at least as far as being aware of stuff, she's gone out of her way to tell us stuff like never start your talk with stories about the bishopric. Never, one thing that's not on this list, she always says never start a talk with saying, I've been asked to speak about, duh. That should never be done.
That's a bad talk, people.
You don't do that. You don't say that. Who writes a paper and says, I'm going to write a paper now? About blah blah blah. People get an idea what you're discussing, but you just go into it.
I love the trends of like watching conferences, see the guys that get up and they come right to the pulpit and they just lead into their first story that like makes it painfully clear what they're talking about, right? Like it's obvious they're talking about faith or about prayer or whatever it is after a quick like minute and a half story. It's like, do that. It's just as good, and people get some application of the principle in their life already.
Yeah. So it's bad form, people. Trust me, to just say, I was asked to speak about blank. That shows a lack of effort. Don't do that.
Laziness.
Your talk should speak for itself without you having to say what the topic is. Anyway, number 2, pretty good one. Do not spend too much time introducing yourself. And of course, sometimes it's not necessary at all. I think that's fair. I don't know if there's much more to say about that one, but I think that's good advice.
That was always a big problem in like singles wards because everybody wants, you know, that's what they're doing it for. Like, they ask people to give talks so that you can get to know the
ward.
Yeah,
I know.
So they do a lot of the introduce yourself stuff. But
then sometimes, then sometimes they even say too much, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah, though I don't really mind it too much until it goes into like the 4 and 5 minutes, and that becomes the majority of their talk.
Exactly.
Right. Let me tell you. Let me tell you about how I met my wife. Boop, 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 boop.
Oh, this is on. I just realized a permissible time to actually start a story start a talk with the story of receiving the assignment.
Yes.
From experience. You see, my friend, one day many years ago, a member of our bishopric who often bumbled his running of sacrament meeting got up at the end of sacrament meeting and said, "We would like to spank everyone who spoke today." And the whole place just erupted, as you might expect, because he said he wanted to spank everyone instead of thank everyone.
Well,
anyway,
does it get better?
Yes, it does. It was actually, it was one of the funnier moments I can ever think of in church. Like, I've never seen a ward laughing that much. Everyone was going. Anyway, the next Sunday, I happened to be speaking. And I was debating not doing this because our stake president decided to show up. And I got up and actually said, "You know, I don't believe in starting talks with stories about how the bishopric assigned me to do this or blah, blah, blah. However, I would like to spank Brother So-and-so for asking me to speak."
Oh, that is rich.
Oh, okay.
That is rich.
It was beautiful. That popped in my head, and I probably didn't need to share it, so let's move along.
Okay. All right, number three?
Three, there is no need to justify the topic. Like he says right here, sometimes speakers feel the need to preface talks with a disclaimer, saying they are not qualified to address the topic or what have you. That's like you were saying. That's a great way of saying, I'm not good at this. Well, then why would I want to listen to you?
Well, I think I've seen this applied in, like, a lot of people get up and be like, you know, they asked me to speak on honesty, and I'm the last one you should come to about honesty. But anyway, now let me teach you about this. It's like, no, that doesn't work. Just leave that out. We all know that we're imperfect and that we're working on things. But, you know, don't share past transgressions in order to teach repentance. You just don't need to do it.
Yeah. And I think the beauty of it is this is, you know, whom the Lord calls, the Lord qualifies. If you're being asked to speak, barring,
yeah, obviously they think you have something to say on it.
Yeah, they think you have something to say, and the bishop's bricks for real do pray about this and ponder who should speak on things, and barring any sort of you know, worthiness issues to sort out, you're entitled to be there and speak about it. You're there for a reason. And sure, I've given talks in the past where I've felt, I don't want to say you know, inadequate addressing it, but something that wasn't in my wheelhouse necessarily. But that doesn't make a difference. The great thing about a talk is if you prepare for the talk, you get a ton out of doing it, and I think that's one of the main points of
just don't make the excuse, because the audience turns off.
Yeah,
we do.
Use humor sparingly, if at all, which I think is pretty interesting. And that there is a fine line when using humor in talks.
Right, it's not definitely bad to like break the ice and get things moving a
break
little bit.
Break the ice and have random bits of humor here and there. But how many talks have you seen in the past where it just becomes just too informal, too sarcastic or irreverent or what have you? I've seen that happen, and it makes it so it's a comedy hour, so it's not a talk.
Well, what's really sad about it is a lot of people come away from that and be like, "That was an awesome talk. That was so funny." It's like, what was the talk about? They're like, "I don't know. It's just funny."
It was funny. Yeah. Maybe it's just us, but I don't want to walk away. Sure, it's great to be entertained in a way, but I'm at church for a reason. I want to walk away feeling edified. That's why it was a good talk.
It's true.
Because I learned something, because the spirit was great. And
we're total hypocrites in saying this, because we mock everything, but...
Well, this isn't sacrament.
Use humor, spirit.
So, we're doing a podcast. We would not be doing this in church. By the way, talk about being appropriate in the chapel. On Sunday, our other gospel doctrine teacher was MIA. No idea where he was. We have two gospel doctrine classes in our ward. And
yes.
I was teaching. And so we had to put the whole lesson in the chapel. And it's not that my lessons are in any way irreverent or what have you, but with it being gospel doctrine, I don't mind the use of humor as much. You know, you can be a little more animated in a class setting as far as teaching.
Sure.
Compared to sacrament meeting. But just being in the chapel and feeling the need to be reverent, it totally had me kind of off kilter as far as my normal teaching demeanor.
Everybody heckled you and said, "Inappropriate, Jeff."
Everyone said it was terrible. The bishop was just sitting in the
quiet,
back.
Quiet dignity, elder.
It's true. The bishop had his arms folded and just looked at me with this fuming look on his face the whole time.
Quiet dignity.
So mad. All right, the last one of this little bit here. Teach something. Don't just speak on a subject. Let's see. So to elaborate, he says, for example, rather than simply listing activities that that everyone should and shouldn't do on Sunday. Make it a goal to teach what the Sabbath is, how listeners can more fully keep it holy, and how it will be a blessing.
Dude, so, I hadn't even realized how just disappointing those talks are. But like, when people get up and they're just like, today I'm talking about gratitude. Here's 20 scriptures on gratitude.
Oh, and then they say, the Webster's Dictionary defines gratitude as...
Yeah, like, you just go through the elements of, like, here's what gratitude is, and that's what the whole talk is, and you never give me anything, like, about how you've applied gratitude, or what you've done with it, or how it's, like, how you've used it in your life. That bothers me.
I agree. I think I want to have this David Hickson on the show. I love his last paragraph. Speaking in sacrament meeting is a sacred responsibility. Usually there are at least several hundred people listening. Don't do the congregation the disservice of stretching 4 minutes of doctrine more than 10 minutes. If you are assigned 10 minutes, plan to use each moment teaching and testifying. Well said, sir.
Just saying, we can do a lot better.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done, Hicks.
Do you have any other ones to add to that list that we didn't cover?
Let's see. Other things that irk me about people's talks at sacrament meeting. Don't get up and read the talk. Like, that bothers me, because I'm like, well, that's more of like a, I don't know. There's a lot of people that do it and think that was a good talk because they wrote it out, it was prepared, it was well done.
Well, and that's fine to do. You should write out your talk if that's what works. That's fine.
Yeah, but then don't get up and read it, though. And my issue with that is actually something. We had an investigator on my mission that a gal got up and did that, and he's like, why didn't you just print that out and give it to us? Could have saved me a whole hour.
Yeah, and of course, I try to approach this from an empathetic point of view, because some people obviously aren't as comfortable with public speaking, and the best they can do is they've written it out and prepared. But as far as delivering it, that might not be their forte. They're better at reading it. I mean, ideally, we'd all work at expanding our abilities in all of these arenas. But you know, I try to take it all with a grain of salt, because some people aren't as comfortable.
Like, talk from the heart. Just talk about how. You can read the principles, like read chunks of it, but when you talk about, when you bear your testimony or you talk about how you've applied it to yourself, look us in the eye and tell us. It makes it a lot more believable.
That is totally fair. My only last one to add, sacrament meeting is not institute. So,
meaning
don't get up there pouring through scripture. Use the scriptures, obviously, but don't make it like a scripture chase where you're flipping through scriptures, asking the congregation to turn to whatever scripture with you, which I believe is proscribed in the general handbook, if I'm not mistaken. Because it's not a lesson. You are giving a talk. It is a discourse.
So it is.
And so, it does bother me when everyone's like, let's flip around to this and this, and what do you think this is, and blah, blah, blah. And then I sit there, and I'm thinking, like, how is this any different from me going to gospel doctrine or an institute class? Sacrament meeting is different for a reason, so.
And there you go, people.
And that was a lovely segment, Al.
Maybe we could have prefaced that with our rants. But Hickson, thanks for bringing it up. We got things to talk about. So I don't know if you guys have heard.
Sorry. We have to do a bit right here for this right now, because it's This Week in Catholics now, right?
Yep.
Okay. Make something up.
This week in Catholics.
Oh, I'm chanting, because that's what they do.
No.
Right. There you go.
No. Okay. So yeah, this week in Catholicism, the Vatican has now said that it's okay to use condoms and contraceptives. Because...
Did they actually say contraceptives?
Well, I'm just categorizing condoms.
All right. Just want to be clear.
Because transferring AIDS to a sexual partner is a greater sin than using a contraceptive. So he said that... that it's okay to... Like, if you're going to have sex, use a condom to keep transmitting AIDS. I don't know. It gets a little bit blurry. But the thing that I thought was interesting about this is, just kind of reflecting on a Mormon's point of view on this, because there's a lot of diversity in what's right and wrong so far as contraceptives go with the church, like within the church, right?
Yeah,
I mean, totally. Obviously the abstinence approach is what we shoot for with you know, single people. But I wonder, like, I even wonder, so a couple of things I want to talk about is, one, like, how far do you go with teaching your kids about how to use this stuff and what's right and how it all works? And two, within, like, the confines of marriage, right, there's still a lot of discussion about what's acceptable and what's not. The handbook of instruction says, husbands must be considerate of their wives. I'm quoting here. Husbands must be considerate of their wives, who have a great responsibility, not only for bearing children, but also for caring for them through their childhood. Husbands should help their wives conserve their strength and health, and married couples should seek inspiration from the Lord in meeting their marital challenges and rearing their children according to the teachings of the gospel. Essentially saying, you know, you guys need to make this decision together. They make a point of kind of highlighting the fact that we are married in order to procreate. Like, that's the whole purpose behind marriage, and you're going to be a little bit disappointed if you get to heaven and God was like, well, I gave you all these kids. You only accepted two, though. And, there's a lot stored up in bathrooms that could have made it in had you not used condoms and contraceptives. I mean, like, that we'd be a little bit sheepish, but at the same time, like, planning your family is not a bad thing, I don't think. I wouldn't say.
No.
But you go back a few years, and there's very strong verbiage to the contrary, right? Where, like David O. McKay once said, when the husband and wife are healthy and free from weakness and disease that might be transplanted with injury to their offspring, the use of contraceptives is to be condemned. And George Albert Smith says, The prompting to, let's see, children are a heritage from the Lord, and those who refuse the responsibility of bringing them into the world and caring for them are prompted by selfish motives, and the result is that they suffer the penalty of selfishness throughout eternity. Thanks. There's no excuse.
Well, I think even some aspects of that still stand. I mean, obviously, if we are just not having kids because of personal reasons, whatever it is, you know, just I just don't want to have children. I don't want to take on the responsibility. I don't want to cease to be hot. I mean, whatever. I mean, yeah, those aren't excusable even today. I mean, that's not bringing children into the world just for selfish means because you're worried more about you.
Yeah.
You worry about them. I think that stands. It is an interesting thing because the church I've always appreciated has a relatively pragmatic stance when it comes to these sorts of things. You know, it's the case with the Vatican. You know, the big thing here is that, of course, they're allowing condom use, but it's to prevent sexually transmitted diseases. They're still not saying it's a form of contraception. They still stand against that. But that's at least a way forward for the Vatican to say, hey, don't do that. The other funny thing, of course, is the Vatican is just being like, whatever, have the sex. Use the condoms to prevent the diseases. Whereas we don't say, you know, have the sex.
Or, right. You
know, so, but it's true.
Did your mom ever have the conversation with you growing up about like how to use the like a condom and stuff?
No.
No?
No. No.
That came up in the sex talk for me growing up.
I did not get that. No, I just got the sex talk with my dad, and it was more about the logistical, physical implications of said lovemaking and whatnot.
But my mother, bless her heart, was very informative. Well, because my dad did the, all right, son, you ain't doing none of this, are you? I'm like, no. He's like, good. When you get married, it'll all make sense.
And I can understand it because you kind of get your lack of filter more from your mom, I think.
Yeah,
you?
The lack of filter definitely comes from mom. But also, like, mom's like, all right, kids, you know, just so you know, this is how this works and this is what this means. And when you hear this being talked about, this is what we're talking about. That actually worked out really well for me, just kind of having an understanding or a grasp of how it all worked. And then it wasn't like super awkward when the condom discussion comes up in school or something, right? Yeah.
Well, then it's the fine line. I guess there's different views of parenting. You know, there's the parent who thinks, well, I don't want to explain those things to my kid because then they're going to get an idea and get more curious about how to do it. But then there are those who say, you know what I mean? Like, don't tell my kids how to use contraceptives and blah, 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 because then they might actually want to abuse the privilege. But then there's also the risk of if you don't explain it to them, they might get curious from their friends and find out on their own. So
right, I think that's a terrible risk, because what it's going to be is like the whole logic behind that is if I don't explain to them how to use this, then because they're too ignorant as to the use of it, they'll stay away from the activity completely. Which is like, that's not how kids work.
No, kids are way too curious. They are going to want to know everything.
Well, and you not telling me does not deter me from finding out, right?
No, it makes it more taboo, if anything else. Absolutely. And for adolescents, taboo is the most dangerous thing for adolescents. Cause
All
they want to do is push against the norms. They want to explore. They want to do all these things. I mean, I understand the urges. You and I have been there. You know, we've been that age. You're discovering everything about yourself and about people at that age. So it's risky. I do like that the church is, like I said, more pragmatic, and that, you know, it's a, I don't know what the official line is today, but essentially that husbands and wives should prayerfully consider using contraceptives and planning, you know, their family and blah, 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 and really seek guidance from the Spirit in doing so.
Right? They say don't put off having a family, but at the same time, like, you know, if you're going to be in a much better situation to have kids in 3 months, like, there's nothing saying, you know, like, that you can't use a condom or you can't use contraceptives for 3 months while you...
Totally.
Yeah, so it was... So, yeah. Pray about it.
So,
Work through it with your significant other.
Those of you who are engaging in the sex.
In the sex with the sexes.
Be careful out there, everybody.
I don't want
anything to happen to them.
We should do the, you remember, like, at the end of cartoons, they'd have, like, the anti-drug, or, like, the serious moment with the actors. So, like, Michael J. Fox would come on and be like...
At the end of a cartoon, Michael J. Fox comes on?
I watched a lot of weird cartoons. No, like, Family Matters, right? Urkel comes out and he's like, listen, kids.
Yeah.
I know we talked about some drugs today. Those are a bad idea.
They are. Oh, yeah, like how, The More You Know on CBS, or on NBC. My favorite ones are CBS Cares, because they're way weirder. And The More You Know does that. The more you know.
We talked about abusing pets today.
In our last minutes here, just some shout-outs to one Jenna McPherson, who hopefully some of you know and have come to know. She was on our show a while ago promoting her book, There's No Place Like Home, Evening, her FHE book for adults. Wanted to give her a shout out because the Mormon Times finally picked it up and reviewed it. And
what did they say?
They love it. She gets very good reviews. I did ask her on Sunday though if she's actually had any bad reviews, but she said no. If I had bad reviews, I would post them just as well as with the other ones. I believe the quote was, "I believe in digital democracy."
And wow!
But she's gotten great reviews for it, and it is a good book. It's extremely useful, and it's beyond me why various family home evening committees and YSA wards are not utilizing this to make themselves have better lives and find eternal companions in the process. There's a guarantee inside the front cover.
Really?
You will be married within a year.
Wow.
From implementing that book.
I like it.
I know. I have a cat on me now. This is fun.
All right, that's weird.
Yeah. Hello, cat.
Also, this breaking, speaking of the Mormon Times, see, when there's no news, I'm convinced the Mormon Times, like when there's nothing going on in Mormondom.
They provide it to us.
The Mormon Times, just they do us so much good. They are our George W. Bush to late night talk show.
Yes!
So this week, they released the hot topic of the top 10 cities to live in the Southwest.
Oh, the Southwest this time. Wonderful.
Finally, because I've wanted to move to Texas and Oklahoma so bad, but I haven't known where the top cities would be. So now we know.
The best one, Sherman Denison, Texas. I have no idea where that is.
No one does, Jeff. No one does. And they circumvent New Mexico completely, which I would take issue, Albuquerque and White Rock.
Or Las Cruces. Hello. They're like, where's the love?
Yep. So Arizona got two, Oklahoma got one, and Texas has all the rest.
I take issue with the Arizona one, as you know, because the Arizona one is Phoenix, Mesa, Arizona, ergo all of Maricopa County. I think there's a lot more diversity there than to just rank the whole place. Come on in.
No, it got a rank of 183 nationally.
And it says right here, with two temples and one under construction, That doesn't even make sense.
Are these ranks according? How are they ranked?
They're ranking. They always rank it with all sorts of weird stuff. Number of people, median home price.
Anyway, to the Mormon Times, we say, please stop this, but I know you'll continue to do it, and so we look forward to mocking you in the future.
I love them dearly. Now, what do we have? Our final moments. What are the other random? Oh, well, I'll let you do the Times. Oh, great website here at Keep a Pitchin' In.
This is an awesome, awesome ad.
Great. And this is posted today. So be glad it's the late post this week. Otherwise, this would not have made it on the show. It's just an old poster they found from Heber J. Grant. Yes, meaning the president of the church. Heber J. Grant's old insurance company from back in the day. It's an ad from 1908. We'll have to pull the picture off. We'll post the link, but I think we'll just yank the picture as well. So you can see it on the TWIM site, thisweekinmormons.com. Here is a picture of a matchbox with matches and a bunch of mice taking the matches out and walking away with them in their mouths.
Which I love the comment on it saying, if your house is such that this is a realistic scene, that of mice like building a beaver dam.
No, it's the risk that apparently mice cause house fires by doing this.
If that's the problem, is fire really your biggest threat? No.
Oh, it's beautiful. Hilarious photo. It just looks like this militia of mice systematically pulling out what look like little batons, really, and walking away with them to just set ablaze everything they come across. It's wonderful.
Hey, that happens.
So, also, Heber J. Grant, we salute you big time for being the president of the church and for running an amazing ad. Thank you. And yes.
And then in the Zarahemla Times, we're bringing you our last check-in of the year.
Oh, it is!
Three-panel comic this week.
And I panel. Think we only have, what, Soraya is the only one in this one, yes?
She says in the first one, it's been a good year. The second one, I can tell because...
And there are a bunch of pieces of paper all over a table, presumably.
Right. And then in the last one, she says, my gratitude jar overfloweth. I mean, really? Gratitude jar.
It's kind of cute.
That is rich. That is rich. But yeah, that's about it. Oh.
What?
That's it.
No, I won't do the Harry Potter.
Okay.
Did you hate Harry Potter? But
I do. I hate him.
But just so you know, in the Mormon Times, from Chris Hicks, an article about the nude scene in Harry Potter. Anyway, it's stupid.
We talked about it last week.
Isn't as much about the nude scene. It's the fact that he's wondering why it was there in the first place. And I'm like, dude, this guy is basically saying that PG-13 is a soft R, and he's complaining that kids are there because it's a kids' movie. And if he thinks PG-13 is a soft R, evidently it's not a kids' movie. Don't take your kids.
Booyah. Booyah.
So don't go if you can't handle it. If you can't roll with the big boys.
What? What?
Apparently he can't handle it. He can't roll with the big boys. I don't know
well,
what
that,
I'm saying.
That's our show.
We're done. It's over.
That's what we got to say.
Another one done. Feels good.
Twim is in the can.
And we apologize, of course, for the late post of this week, mostly because of blizzards and Al in transit and whatnot. We were a little bit delayed, but...
Yeah, ended up being stuck in Wyoming for an evening.
Oh, so that's what happened.
Yeah.
Because I asked you said you left, and I was so confused why it took you so long to get there.
I tried so hard to drive.
But blizzards in Wyoming, blizzards in Colorado interrupting us last week. That was really funny. Did listeners even know that happened at all?
No.
Last week, you may not know this, we normally record live, but we had to pause multiple times during the recording because Al's brother was stranded in the Rocky Mountains, so...
I was setting up a place for him to sleep.
You hopefully don't notice it in the podcast, but we probably stopped like three or four times in the middle.
It's because you're so good at this, Jeff.
It's all you.
All right, everybody. Have a great week.
Thanks, buddy. See you next week. Have fun in Utah. Have fun visiting Utah. And
it's a great life I've established here.
I'm sure. You're very established. Please let me know when you open a bank account. It'll be great. And it's going to be it, everybody. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. My dear friend, I'm glad you're safe. Have a good week. And thanks for being here, everybody. We love you all so much. Seriously. That's going to be it. I'm alone now. Al left. All right, this is This Week in Mormons. Thanks for listening. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, all that jazz. Tell your friends. We're cool guys. All right, bye.